Hello, it's Thursday the 6th of January and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. North Korea has reported that the projectile launched on Wednesday was a hypersonic missile. This would be the second time that the regime has tested such a weapon. We'll have more details in our news briefing shortly. The ruling DP's presidential candidate Lee Jae-myung has taken a significant lead over PPP rival Yoon Suk-yeol in the polls. We take a closer look later for Korean Politics Digest. And for Explore Korea this week is for the bookworms out there, as we discover more about Paju's Book City. We have all that and more coming up on today's Korea 24. North Korea on Thursday boasted that it test-fired what it called a hypersonic missile a day earlier. South Korea's foreign ministry is discussing with the U.S. and other nations on its repercussions and steps they need to take, and all eyes are on actions by the United Nations. Joining us in the studio to update us with the latest on this and our other headlines of the day is our KBS World Radio news editor, Koo Hee-jin. Hello, Hee-jin.
Hello, Jang.
So first, can you tell us what North Korea said exactly about this latest provocation?
Of course. According to the North's official Korean Central News Agency, the Academy of Defense Science conducted a test launch of a missile on Wednesday. It claimed that after detaching from the rocket, the missile traveled 120 kilometers laterally and precisely hit a target 700 kilometers away. This was the second reported North Korean test of a hypersonic missile after one on September 28th of last year. The report said the test launch, which North Korean leader Kim Jong-un did not observe, confirmed flight control and the stability of the missile, as well as the performance of the new lateral maneuvering applied to the detached hypersonic gliding warhead. UN resolutions on North Korea ban all missile launches using ballistic missile technologies. A South Korean foreign ministry official said the government is closely communicating with major UN Security Council members, including the US, about possible responses to the North's latest launch.
And there has been a response from the US, and we're also looking at a possible action by the UN, I understand.
Yes, the US condemned North Korea's latest launch, calling the projectile a ballistic missile. According to a State Department statement, Secretary of State Antony Blinken denounced North Korea's test in a phone conversation with his Japanese counterpart, Hayashi Yoshimasa, on Wednesday. The UN Security Council is also widely expected to convene a meeting to discuss North Korea's latest launch, much as it had earlier when North launched its first so-called hypersonic missile last year.
Let's continue on now and look at the political scene here in Korea. The floor leadership of the main opposition People Power Party has officially proposed the impeachment of their party leader, Lee Jun-suk. They are claiming that the young leader was responsible for internal conflict and confusion that led to the party's presidential candidate Yoon Suk-yeol's poll numbers to drop. Can you tell us more about this internal strife?
Yes, a number of participants of a closed-door meeting of PPP lawmakers on Thursday cited senior deputy floor leader Chu Kyung-ho as saying that the time has come to make a decision about Lee. Representative Taehyung-ho then proposed seeking his impeachment through a secret ballot. There have been some calls within the PPP for Lee to take responsibility for the party continuously being mired in confusion and the sharp drop in approval ratings for its presidential candidate Yoon Suk-yeol. Key leaders of PPP had called on the young leader to attend the emergency meeting on Thursday, which he did not show up for. Lee said later that his condition for attending a general party meeting is that it is open to the public, saying that he has serious concerns over anything not allowed open public discussion.
On the other side of the fence, the ruling Democratic Party presidential candidate Lee Jae-myung on Thursday pledged to root out crimes related to real estate under his administration. Can you elaborate?
Yes, he made the pledge saying that tricking people into buying unusable land by making them believe it can be developed is a serious crime that also paralyzes public land development. He was posting his seventh definite happiness campaign pledge on social media to eradicate real estate fraud. The candidate stressed that when he was Gyeonggi governor, he set up a call center to receive reports on such practices and cooperated with the police to arrest 15 people and seek the confiscation or preservation of 24.2 billion won in illegal profits. The former governor said he also designated approved land transaction zones in the province's 29 cities and counties to prevent fraudulent activities.
Moving on now to the COVID-19 front, South Korea reported over 4,000 new COVID-19 cases on Thursday amid signs of a let-up in infections. Critical cases also stayed below 1,000 for the third consecutive day. So what were the latest figures, Heejin?
Yes, the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency reported 4,126 daily new infections on Thursday, down by more than 300 from the previous day, and the first time the daily tally dropped below 5,000 since November 25th. The number of patients in serious or critical condition dropped by 71 from a day ago to 882, remaining below 1,000 for the third straight day. The figure fell to the 800 range for the first time in 24 days. And Finance Minister Hong Nam-ki on Thursday unveiled plans to provide some 40 trillion won in new support for small and mid-sized businesses that have been hit by tighter measures. The fresh funds are separate from the nearly 36 trillion won that the government has put aside to provide to small business owners in the form of low-interest loans. The minister also said the government will swiftly reimburse value-added taxes to small business owners and mid-sized firms before the Lunar New Year holidays.
And finally, three firefighters who went missing at the scene of a warehouse fire in Pyeongtaek on Thursday were sadly found dead. Can you give us more details?
Yes, according to Gyeonggi Province, the bodies of 50-year-old Lee Hyung-seok, 31-year-old Park Soo-dong and 25-year-old Cho Chan were found on the premises of the seven-story warehouse. They are believed to have been trapped by flames that spread swifter than expected. The fire broke out at the cold storage warehouse of a major online food delivery mall that was under construction late Wednesday evening in Pyeongtaek, some 70 kilometres south of Seoul. It took several attempts to douse the fire, first reported at 11:46 p.m., which firefighters finally extinguished some 14 hours later. President Moon Jae-in expressed condolences over their deaths, saying he is heartbroken by the news of these three firefighters who died while engaging in rescue activities at the forefront of protecting the lives and safety of people, according to presidential spokesperson Park Yong-mi.
Heejin, thank you for the updates today.
Thank you.
Latest polls show that the ruling Democratic Party's presidential candidate Lee Jae-myung has taken a significant lead over the main opposition People Power Party's Yoon Sung-yeol for the first time in this presidential race. However, on the rise is also a third party candidate, An Cheol-soo, the minor opposition People Party's candidate. This shift has shaken up the race with only 62 days until Election Day. To take a closer look at the polls and the latest development from the camps, we have joining us in the studio Affiliate Professor Kim Byung-ju from the Hangul University of Foreign Studies. Professor, Happy New Year. It's great to see you.
Same to you as well. Great to see you.
And it's been quite the start to the new year in Korean politics, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so much to go through, and we really don't have time to go through all of the ups and downs we've seen in the last week. Mm-hmm. But we'll do what we can, and we'll start by looking at the poll numbers. Mm. At the turn of the year, most polls showed that the ruling DP's Lee had gained a significant lead over his PPP rival Yoon Sung-yeol, and that was shown in KBS's latest poll as well, the results of which came out on Wednesday. It was conducted by Hanguk Research on Monday and Tuesday. 1,000 adults were asked who they would vote for if the election was held tomorrow. The DP's Lee Jae-myung garnered 39.1% support and Yoon 26%. That's a difference of 13.1 percentage points, well outside of the margin of error and the biggest lead Lee has seen. However, the minor opposition People's Party contender An Cheol-soo also garnered 10.6% of support, rising from the single digits he had been stuck in since Yoon won the PPP's nomination. The poll had a confidence level of 95% and a margin of error of plus or minus 3.1 percentage points. So, Professor, what do you read into this poll?
Lots of little interesting revealing details. In addition to the numbers you mentioned, if we compare the previous numbers, for instance, I'm mindful of the January 1st survey that we the KBS survey introduced. There, if you compare that, those numbers and the numbers that you mentioned right now, no surprise on Yoon Sung-yeol's side. His number has gone down from 27.3 to what you mentioned, 26. So there's a drop of over 1%, no surprise. What's surprising to me is Lee Jae-myung's numbers. January 1st, Lee Jae-myung's numbers was 39.3%. This time you said 39.1%.
So it's gone down.
It's gone down.
Mm. Very, very small margin, 0.2, within the margin of error, definitely,
right.
But still
so
gone down.
At least
down.
It didn't go up, right?
Right, right.
That's a big surprise to me. And again, no big surprises on Cheol-soo's side, as you indicated and as mentioned. His number you mentioned was 10.6, but if you compare it to January 1st, 8.1, so big jump right there. But I pay attention to Lee Jae-myung's numbers right there. I think that's quite interesting what is happening. So obviously, more clearly looks like the voters are moving from Yoon Sung-yeol to An Cheol-soo,
rather than from Yoon Sung-yeol to Lee Jae-myung.
Right, right. So that's something to note. And
right, in Korea, when someone overtakes the leading candidate, they call it the golden cross. But here, Lee hasn't really picked up points. Rather, Yoon has lost points, primarily, it seems, to An. So this trend is being called the dead cross as well.
Dead cross, right, right. I like that term. Not that I like the situation where the term is being used, but the term itself is interesting. And respondents in this particular latest KBS poll, there 54% of the respondents believe Lee is most likely to get elected as opposed to Yoon, 25%. So there's a big number there. Many people believing that overall trend is in favor to Lee. Not necessarily they're going to vote for Lee, but they believe Lee is going to win. That's no surprise, but interesting point to note. And this time, under this current poll, 30% of the respondents said they could change their mind. So I think that 30% is still a big number, right? So that's something to note. Last thing that I want to mention with regard to the latest poll is that the number for Lee Jae-myung you mentioned, 39.1%, compare that with 39.9% that he got back in October. That was before PPP finalized, Yoon Sung-yeol as their candidate, but it was after when Lee Jae-myung was chosen as the party. Mid-October, poll number said Lee was getting 39.9%. So current number is much lower than that. What does that mean? We're not sure, right? What's going to happen? So still lots of exciting things could happen indeed. And we'll see what happens. If I may add one more point.
Well, I mean, that suggests that perhaps he has reached a ceiling in the number of support he can get.
That's an interesting observation indeed, right? He may not be able to ever go over 40%. Who knows, right? But 40% is absolutely not enough to get elected. So there's a road to travel for him at the same time. Last point I'd like to add with regard to the latest poll is that respondents, when they were asked which party's campaign team is doing a great job, they said DP 68% and then PPP 11%. So what does that mean? There's no surprise here, but what it means is that the current changes of numbers have a lot to do with the way people view how these two campaigns teams are working out. And we know all this pandemonium that's going on the PPP side. So obviously, what's happening inside PPP's campaign team seems to have a great impact on the falling numbers for Yoon.
Let's talk briefly a bit more about Ahn's numbers. Do you think this is sustainable? Do you think there's even a chance that Ahn could overtake Yoon? There's even talks of merging the parties and Ahn taking over entirely. What do you make of all this noise?
It's a difficult call to make, but I do personally see people around me talking about, thinking about voting for Ahn. So looks like indeed he seems to be taken very seriously as an alternative for a lot of voters' choice. So we'll have to see how it pans out. Talking about Ahn Cheol-soo as a candidate, two opposite observations. Number one is the baggage that he has been carrying ever since 2012. We remember 2012. Ahn Cheol-soo then was Yoon Suk-yeol now. I mean, until recently.
Sure.
Right?
An outsider candidate.
Total outsider, never been in politics, big star. And then all of a sudden people chose, you have to run for the presidency. And Ahn Cheol-soo was fast rising star then. At that time, his liability, his biggest problem was the vision gap, vision deficit, meaning that he was never clear what he was going to offer to the people.
Right.
He was continually saying he's going to follow people's will. He will do whatever people want. But as a candidate, that's a real liability.
Right.
You're not exactly...
We don't know what he stands for.
Yeah. People are buying you as, people are giving you their vote to buy your ideas, policy ideas, what you are going to do for us. But he's never saying what he was going to do for the people. So that was his liability, sort of like Yoon Suk-yeol these days, like policy ideas, unclear what he stands for and that kind of stuff. He has come a long way. Now he is one of the champions of, for instance, national pension reform, for instance. He's the only candidate who's talking about it. A lot of people are responding quite positively about that. It's a very courageous political act and everything. However, still, a lot of people seem to be unclear what he stands for at this point. So is he going to play an opportunist that he played 2012 once again this time or not? It's a big question. However, positive side is that 2012 was 10 years ago. For the last 10 years, he has suffered. He has gone through he has walked through a rough road. He has traveled a difficult path as a politician. He must have learned a lot about politics. So that's something voters can count on. So Ahn Cheol-soo today seems to have two positive and negative baggages kind of on his shoulder at this point.
Right. We'll see if Ahn's numbers continue to rise. But that will, of course, depend on how the Yoon camp handles the current situations. As we've seen in Yoon's poll numbers, his campaign is pretty much in crisis mode, and some drastic developments took place this week. He dissolved his election committee amid a persistent internal discord and pledged to launch a definitive new start. This, of course, comes with just a little over 2 months until Election Day on March 9th. The overhaul includes the departure of Election Committee Chief Kim Jong-in, also known as the Kingmaker, just 33 days after he'd come on board. Yoon announced that the Election Committee would be replaced by a streamlined election headquarters made up of young and talented hands-on staff. The new election campaign will be led by four-term lawmaker Representative Kwon Young-se. So, Professor, a drastic overhaul, and he has essentially declared that he's going to do it his own way. What do you make of that situation and that decision? And how detrimental or positive could this shakeup be for Yoon?
The way we see it here, what Yoon has shown to the people through this turmoil, internal, turmoil, pandemonium inside the party, is that we have the voters came to have a serious question about, as mentioned before, serious question about his managerial skill and leadership skill. As I mentioned before in this program, he spent his entire career with inside the Office of Prosecutors. It's an extremely hierarchical organization. Leading it is easy. Once you get to the on the top position, you tell them what to do, and they'll do whatever it takes. That's not about managerial skills. It's not about leadership skills. Anyone can do that. Mm. But in political party, it's total pandemonium. You really got to show your leadership, managerial skills, and the skill of your people skills and all that. And Yoon Suk-yeol might have shown that he totally lacks this, possibly, as a result of this pandemonium. So he has a lot to make up for at this point. And so it's a really, you asked the question, how damaging this is. I think this is very, very, very damaging in the eyes of the voters. And he has a lot to catch up. Kwon Young said, the new head of campaign team, as you mentioned, he's a four-term lawmaker. Another thing is, and he's known to be a very, very smart person and a smart strategist as well. But he spent his time before, you know, as a member of, you know, like parliament, he spent most of his time as a prosecutor. So it's kind of same background. Mm. And he served as a Korea's ambassador to China under Park Geun-hye administration. So we have to wait and see how much he can deliver in terms of campaign management and campaign operations and so on. So many eyes are watching. As I said, Yoon Suk-yeol has a lot of room to make up for.
Sure, there might be many reasons that people might cite for this situation. They might blame the party chair, Lee Jun-suk. They might blame Kim Jong-un. Mm-hmm. They might blame others. But at the end of the day, the buck really stops with Yoon Suk-yeol. This is his campaign,
right,
and his campaign has gone to a bit of a disarray.
Right, but that's not to mention the problems with Kim Jong-un and Lee Jun-suk. You know, in the eyes of the people who are watching PPP, with any feeling of attachment, or, you know, these people who are willing to vote for, who used to be willing to vote for, may have great negative feeling against Kim Jong-un and Lee Jun-suk. Because basically, in their eyes, there was a team formed within PPP, and this team had to seek victory rather than these individual players like Kim Jong-un and Lee Jun-suk talking about their own personal, you know, gains, calculations, and all that. So in the eyes of these people who used to be the supporter of Yoon Suk-yeol, they not only found real problem with Yoon Suk-yeol's managerial skills and leadership, but they got really angry about the fact, in their own belief, that Kim Jong-un and Lee Jun-suk actually destroyed the campaign altogether for their own personal gain. So this anger is right there adding up as a barrier against any feeling for wanting to vote for, Yoon's case.
Have you seen anything like this? 2 months out until voters hit polls,
right,
the campaign essentially resetting itself.
Right.
And if you have, did it ever work?
I don't think so. I mean, like 62 days you mentioned, you know, until the election day. And this kind of pandemonium fiasco, if you can reverse the course, it will be a tremendous miracle. But then again, Korean voters, Korean people, we go after excitements. We go after drama. So,
and I guess the people who has gone over to Ahn Cheol-soo's side could be convinced to come back in a way as well, if he perhaps can get his ship right.
In that regard, I think your point reminds me of the blog writing by Kim Hyung-ho, who used to be one of the speakers of the National Assembly. Kim Hyung-ho belonged to the Conservative Party, the former body of PPP, and he was the head of National Assembly, the legislature. And he wrote in his blog saying that right now, at this point, Yoon Suk-yeol, all he can do is going out of his way to find dramatic solution. And the dramatic solution that former Speaker of the House or Speaker of National Assembly Kim Jong-un sees is that he has to all he can to form a joint front, united front, together with Ahn Cheol-soo, Hong Jun-pyo, and Yoo Seung-min, for the cause of ending the progressive rule, preventing Lee Jae-myung from coming into the office of the presidency.
That is quite a difficult sounding task.
Right, right, right. Mm. So that just tells us how difficult this road or pathway for Yoon Suk-yeol will be for his comeback.
Meanwhile, on Wednesday, when Yoon announced the disbandment of his election campaign committee, Lee Jae-myung was pictured with his rival from the party primaries, former DP chairman Lee Nak-yeon, in the southwestern city of Gwangju, with their hands held together high up in the air. In a show of unity, they jointly presided over the inaugural meeting of a National Unity Vision Committee in the former party leader's support base and the DP's traditional stronghold, the Jeolla region. So it's a stark contrast to what's going on with Yoon's camp. Do you think they are effectively taking advantage of the situation as Yoon campaign flounders, or perhaps the poll numbers show that they perhaps aren't? And in the meantime, what do they need to be careful of? What could go wrong?
Right. I guess it's not only they're taking advantage of the situation on the other side, PPP, but also they're taking a very firm lesson from PPP that you really have to stay together here this time. And so, you know, I have a great respect for Lee Nak-yeon, and I have no desire to downplay what he does. But at the same time, however, politics, it's like everybody is kind of like a novice stock investors. When they see the stock going up, they want to all buy it. They want to stay with it, right? So Lee Jae-myung is going up. So Lee Nak-yeon, I don't want to really downplay his commitment to his party and all that. But when Lee Nak-yeon joins Lee Jae-myung's campaign and everything, I'm just being reminded that people tend to go together with the seeming winners at this time. And that's what happened with Yoon Suk-yeol. A lot of people wanted to join Yoon Suk-yeol's camp just about a month ago. So that could happen. That's what we should probably expect to see in coming days, perhaps. But one point that I want to add, if I may, is that I think Lee Jae-myung is having a long TV talk on the other channel tonight, and he will be talking about policy. Okay, all those fiercely partisan kinds of voters, I'm fine with you guys. But the thing is, for those middle and center block voters, maybe like me, who knows, but we want policy. We want ideas. We want to know details about what you're selling to buy our votes. And it's only good that Lee Jae-myung is really focused on policies, talking about coming up with new ideas to sell to the people so that people can buy it with greater confidence. That's good for the nation. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of doubts about his ethics and all his background and everything. But we need a president who has clear policy ideas. So in that regard, whatever is happening on the other side, what Lee Jae-myung doing right now and focusing on policy is a good thing.
It's an absolutely fascinating period of the campaign, and the next couple of weeks could really make or break the race. Professor, we won't be seeing you next week because we have a special Korean Politics Digest where we'll be speaking to the spokesperson from the two main camps, the DP and the PPP. Well, we hope that's the case, unless some fresh crises in the camps leads to someone pulling out. But yes, that's the plan for now. So, Professor, we'll miss you next week, but we look forward to catching up with you again in 2 weeks' time.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index fell 33.44 points, or 1.13%, on Thursday, ending the day at 2,920.53. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also fell, losing 29.32 points, or 2.90%, to close at 980.30. On the foreign exchange, the local currency weakened 4.1 won against the dollar, ending the day at 1,201 won. You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
We continue on now to Korea Trending, our daily segment where we take a look at some of the other news stories that people have been looking up online in Korea today. And for that, we have Chung Yeon in the studio with us today. Yeon, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello.
So what do you have for us today?
First, we'll talk about a controversial pharmacist in Daejeon who is selling goods from medicine to individual drinks at the flat rate of 50,000 won. Next, we'll discuss South Korean star archer An San ranking first in the world among all female recurve archers. And lastly, we'll check out the Grammy Awards being postponed for a second year in a row due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay, let's jump in. Our first story is a bizarre one about a pharmacy in Korea. Can you tell us more?
Sure. So the first story is about a controversy surrounding a pharmacy in Daejeon that is selling every item on its shelf, from over-the-counter medicine to face masks to energy drinks, for 50,000 won each, which is just over $41. And 15 complaints were sent through to the local public health center that the pharmacy was not giving refunds after selling drugs at an expensive rate, and apparently there is no way to ban them from selling such products at an outlandish price. In a clip released by a local news outlet, you can see 50,000 won price tags on all products in the pharmacy, and this includes items that typically cost just 1,000 won.
Okay, so he was selling every item in the store at 50,000 won, mm-hmm. whether it be medicine or face masks. Do we know if this was some sort of error made by the pharmacist, or was it intentional?
Well, in an interview with the news outlet, the pharmacist who opened his pharmacy just 2 weeks ago said that the number 5, which is O in Korean, is very popular these days, as O is a letter in ojingeo or squid. And in line with that, he decided to price everything at 5만 won or 50,000 won. In addition, he argued that he charges dozens of times more than other pharmacies to prevent drug abuse. And he also emphasized that it is not illegal, as he isn't breaking any laws under the sales price indication system.
Okay, so it's not a mistake, but it is a very peculiar reason for pricing these items like this. But is he really not breaking any laws by charging whatever he wants for his products? Is it really legal?
Technically speaking, yes. So while the current law does not allow a pharmacist to sell medicine for less than the price purchased, there is no way to regulate them from selling at a higher price. And we should note that 3 years ago, this pharmacist had his license suspended for 15 days for plastering signs of obscene expressions and words all over a previous establishment. And police have begun examining whether the pharmacist could be charged with fraud for selling medicine at excessively high prices.
Yeah, so he sounds like a rather odd individual, to say the least. As you mentioned, complaints also came because he refused to refund customers who had unknowingly paid 50,000 won for their product. That, I'm sure, must be problematic legally, but in any case, it looks like local authorities in Daejeon have a bit of a headache on their hands. Okay, moving on. What's our next story for today?
Our next story is about South Korean archer An San climbing to the top of the world rankings at the end of 2021. According to the World Archery Federation's website today, An San ranked first in the recurve woman individual category, which reflects the results of all competitions last year, with 251 points overall. An San swept 3 gold medals at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, the first time a South Korean has accomplished such a feat at a Summer Games. And then she became an arching sensation here in South Korea for her exceptional talent at such a young age, and she was just 20 years old when she qualified for the Olympics and stood on the podium.
Yes, who can forget her incredible run at the Games? But as you said, for her to rank number one, she needed to outdo everyone else in all of her competitions in 2021, not just the Olympics. So how did she perform in her other competitions?
So other than her Olympic medal, she won a bronze medal in the individual event at the Yangtan 2021 Hyundai World Archery Championships. And with that, along with all the other accumulated points, it raised her ranking by 4 places from April 2020, before all rankings were frozen due to COVID-19. And with this, An has been selected as the grand prize winner of the Korea Women's Sports Awards. And she is now the third archer to be awarded this prize, following Ki Bo-bae in 2013 and Chang Hye-jin in 2016.
Yes, so she showed consistency throughout the year, but it certainly looks like she peaked at the right time for the Olympics as well. I understand that South Korea was well represented in the rest of the World Archery Federation's rankings.
So the legendary Kang Tae-young came in 8th and Tang Min-hee placed 16th. But if you follow the sport here, South Korea's teams are nearly unmatched. Team Korea ranked first in the recurve mixed team and the recurve men team categories, and the women secured 2nd place in recurve women team, falling short by just 0.8 points to Mexico.
Yeah, South Korea once again showing that they are a powerhouse in archery. Let's move on to our last story of the day now. What do you have for us?
The 2022 Grammy Awards have been officially postponed due to the uncertainty surrounding the COVID-19 Omicron variant, as announced by the Recording Academy and American TV network CBS yesterday local time. According to the official announcement, the 64th annual Grammy Awards show are postponed in respect of prioritizing the health and safety of those in their music community, the live audience, and also the hundreds of people who work tirelessly to produce the show. And this is the second year in a row that the Grammys have been postponed due to COVID-19. The awards' new date has yet to be determined, but according to the hosts, that will be announced soon.
Yes, this news comes as the Omicron variant is tearing across the states. Yewon, how serious is the situation right now?
So currently, 95% of new cases stateside were infected with the Omicron variant this past week, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And on Monday, the U.S. officially broke the 1 million marker for the first time in daily new infections.
Okay, and the postponement of the Grammys will have been trending in Korea because, of course, the K-pop phenom BTS are up for an award again this year. Mm-hmm. Can you remind us what they're up for?
Sure. They've been nominated a second time for Best Pop Duo or Group Performance for their mega hit single Butter. And they got their first nod in the category last year for Dynamite. And this year, the boys are pitted against team-ups, including Justin Bieber with Benny Blanco, Lady Gaga with Tony Bennett, and Coldplay.
Right, but with the COVID situation in the U.S., I'm sure there will be question marks about whether the boys will be able to attend the ceremony again this year and perform. But of course, first, we'll have to see when the new date is for the ceremony.
Yes.
Okay, we'll wrap it up there for today's Korea Trending. Thank you for bringing us those stories, Yewon, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Thank you. See you then.
Welcome back to our weekly feature now, Explore Korea. Here we discover more about some of the country's culture, history, and travel highlights. And we do that with the help of our special contributors. This week we have our travel contributor, Hannah Roberts, with us in the studio. Hannah, hello and Happy New Year.
Hello, Happy New Year to you too.
Okay, so what are we talking about today for our first Explore Korea of the Year?
So today I want to take you just outside Seoul to a city called Paju, but particularly to a place that a lot of bookworms might like, and that's Paju's Book City.
Okay, so Paju, just north of Seoul, of course, bordering the North Korean border, in fact, right?
That's true, yes. It's a small city in Gyeonggi province, like you said, just outside Seoul, right on the border with North Korea. Lots of people visit the demilitarized zone, also known as the DMZ. Mm-hmm. They visit through Paju, and particularly in Paju, people visit the blue huts of Panmunjom that you'll see on the news when the countries host inter-country talks.
Sure. But we aren't talking about the DMZ today, of course, although that is, of course, a fascinating tourist spot as well. But today, as you said, we're talking about the Book City, Paju Book City.
Yes.
Any reason for this pick today, Hannah?
There is a reason, yes. It's a little convoluted, so stick with me, okay?
Okay.
So, as you'll probably know, couple culture is very strong here in Korea, right?
Okay.
And I'm sure you also probably know about some of the interesting celebration days that happen here every month. I know this is jumping a little further ahead in the year than right now. We've only just started the year.
Sure.
But hang on, bear with me. Most people around the world will know about Valentine's Day.
Of course,
but
yes.
But it is celebrated a little bit differently here in Korea.
Yes, that's right.
Mm, February 14th is typically for women to give chocolates to the men that they like or that they love. But then March 14th is like a second Valentine's Day, and that's for men to return the women's gifts, and it should be twofold, I might add. That's called White Day. March 14th is White Day. And do you see the pattern?
Yep, they're both on the 14th of the month.
That's right. And actually, there is one of these romantic holidays on the 14th of every month.
Yes, there is indeed, yes.
Mm-hmm. April 14th is Black Day. for single people to eat jajangmyeon, which are black bean sauce noodles. Just another few examples. May 14th is Rose Day for gifting roses and apparently wearing yellow. July 14th is Silver Day, when couples are supposed to exchange silver jewellery, typically rings. And November 14th is Movie Day, so you're supposed to go watch a movie with your partner. But the upcoming holiday, January 14th, is known as Diary Day or Journal Day. And that's when couples give each other new diaries ready to record the special dates and events through the year. And so that was my link to Paju Book City.
Right,
a diary is a book, right?
So
I thought we could take a trip to the publishing village in Paju in preparation for upcoming Diary Day.
Right. Well, first, thank you for introducing us to all those 14th days. There's a lot to remember for Korean couples. It can be overwhelming sometimes. But Diary Day sounds very cute. With that in mind, then, can you tell us more about Paju Book City?
Paju Book City is a cultural complex that is entirely dedicated to books in all ways. It houses 250 publication companies with over 100,000 people working there. There are bookstores, there are printing plants, there are publication houses, coffee shops, libraries, literally everything you could think of related to books. It's apparently inspired by a very small but very famous Welsh town called Hay-on-Wye, which is known around the world as the Town of Books. And the idea of Book City was born in 1989. And it was constructed in the early 2000s. Something to point out is that the architecture of the complex is particularly interesting.
Okay.
As it was designed by several different architects from Korea and other countries around the world, working in harmony, and at the same time had the goal of harmonizing itself with the natural land around it without significantly damaging any nature. So that that word harmony is quite important, because as well as this, the buildings and the nature, the Paju Book City Foundation says that the aim of Book City is to bring together art, nature, culture, and books harmoniously, all in one space.
Well, that sounds great. With all that philosophy and thinking behind, then, can you tell us a little bit more about what we can actually do there? Where would be the first spot that you recommend?
The first place you should go to is a place called the Forest of Wisdom. It houses over 200,000 books, nearly 300,000, most of which have been donated from Book City resident publishing houses. But the Forest of Wisdom, it's not a library, nor is it a bookstore. Some people call it an art or experience space. You can sit and read the books as much as you want, but you can't buy or loan the books out like you would in a library or a shop.
Right. Interesting. So it's rather almost like a homage to bookstores and libraries then, and something to enjoy there while you're there at the moment. Okay. I understand that they also host special events there.
They do. The Forest of Books, it's not just a space for sitting and reading. Every May, it hosts the International Children's Book Festival. And in October, there is the Paju International Book Festival. So not just children's books, but all books. Throughout the year, there are also conferences and events on the theme of publishing. And there are also some smaller events. For example, there's something called Midnight Stacks, which sounds quite fun to me, where people come together and they read and discuss books all through the night.
Wow.
Midnight Stacks.
So something definitely for book lovers and especially people who love to talk about books as well, exchange ideas. So that was the Forest of Wisdom then. Anything else to do in Book City?
Families with young children might like to visit the Tantan Story House. That specializes in illustrated storybooks for children, but they also have a performance hall with shows for children, as well as a gallery and a cafe as well.
Okay.
And besides the Forest of Wisdom, you can spend time reading in one of the several so-called book cafes, which are quite popular here, which is like just like that. You don't take the books out and you don't buy them. You read them there. Or you can stay in the Jijihyang Hotel, which is located right alongside, if not inside, the Forest of Wisdom. And a special point there is that if you're staying there as a guest, you can have access to one particular reading room in the Forest of Wisdom 24 hours a day. So it's really a real dream for all the bookworms and bibliophiles out there.
Definitely. Indeed. It's great that there is something for children there as well, I think. Okay, lots of things for bookworms and book lovers to enjoy at Book City then. But I know you also wanted to highlight a little bit more about some other things to do in Padua as well.
Yeah, if you're all booked out, nearby Book City is Heidi Art Village, which is it's a village housing independent stores, galleries, museums and artist residences, as well as residential homes, and also a handful of independent restaurants and cafes. Just like Book City, it was constructed with the landscape and existing natural features in mind, and so they play a part in the layout of the place.
Right.
And so Heidi Village has become a kind of winding maze of art spaces and small businesses. It's quite easy to get lost there.
Right, it's not like a grid.
Definitely not.
Like structured like that. Mm. It's more in line with the nature and the surroundings.
Yeah, very organic. Yeah. It gets really popular on the weekends, and especially in the spring and summer, as it is so full of nature, but also because it's full of great places to shop and eat and drink and really immerse yourself in art and some very particular parts of pop culture and interesting museums and things.
Yeah, it's definitely a very popular destination. In fact, we could probably do a whole segment the Heidi Village as well.
Definitely.
I also recommend it because it's a great place to go people watch as well, I think. Yes. Just to go see the people and the stores there, mm-hmm. the store owners. Okay, so can you tell us a little bit more about how to get to these places today then?
To get to Book City, you can take bus number 2000, which takes you there directly. To get to Heidi Art Village, you can take 2200, which will take you there directly. Mm. Also, bus number 900. But if you want to drive, you can just hop in your car and it will take you just an hour.
So not too far from Seoul. Mm-hmm. That about does it for our segment this week. Hannah, thank you again, as always, for coming in and introducing us to these places. And we'll catch up with you again next time.
See you soon. 춤추듯 날린 꽃잎으로 그대의
My name is Son Tae-jin. You're now listening to Korea 24.
We finish up the show as usual with our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features or reports coming out in tomorrow's English language newspapers here in Korea. For that, we have our staff editor, Mark Wilson, Chair. Mark, hello. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Okay, so, Mark, we've just got time for one story today. What do you have for us?
So we're going to head to the Korea Times. Park Han-seo has this huge feature. It's the Weekender section, actually, on Tim Peters, an American humanitarian worker who founded Helping Hands Korea. HHK is an NGO that has helped over 1,000 North Koreans safely reach third countries after crossing the dangerous China-North Korea border. Its unofficial headquarters is in the unassuming DL Gallery located near Samgachi Station in Seoul and appears to be more of a strategic war room, according to Peters. Park writes that the NGO consists of clandestine operatives, including missionaries, aid workers, ethnic Korean Chinese, and brokers as well, that guide refugees throughout their treacherous journey to life in another country. Now, to read more about how such operations go down with Peters at the helm, you need to pick up tomorrow's Times to look at the Weekender. But I will tell you, I'm making light of the seriousness of the operations, but I can almost hear the military snare drums in the background as I'm reading how they're carried out. It's incredibly organized, really fascinating. It's really something to read.
Right, it does sound like a spy operation of some kind as well. So can you tell us more about Peters as well? How did he come to start this foundation like this?
So Peters, he has a very long history with South Korea, starting all the way back when he first stepped on Korean soil in 1975. He traveled far from his home state of Michigan to countries like Argentina and Venezuela as a Christian missionary, so he was already a veteran humanitarian. But it was just a few months in South Korea that made him meet his now wife, Sunmi. Now, the two did volunteer work outside of South Korea, and that itself, it's almost their journey together. It was almost like reading an epic, like his journey, especially before and after he's met his wife. It really was incredible. and he returned back to Korea a few times, but it was in 1996 when Tim and Sunmi Peters co-founded HHK. Now, some of our listeners may know that 1996, this was during the terrible famine of North Korea,
right,
that's believed to have taken the lives of millions, 3 million, in fact, the Arduous March. To read more about HHK's evolution from secretly sending food aid like vegetable seeds, something as small as that, during that time period, to helping those who are fleeing the North today, and how the pandemic has really changed operations up, you need to pick up tomorrow's Times.
Definitely sounds like a fascinating story and a remarkable individual as well. It's definitely one to check out. We'll wrap it up there for Morning Edition Preview. Thank you for that story, Mark, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Talk to you then.
And that's where we wrap up our show today as well. Thank you for staying with us. We'll be back same time tomorrow, so do join us again then. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you, as always, for listening. Goodbye.